This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
Welcome to the Football Revolution, hosted by Gio, Jules and PK.
You're listening to The Football Revolution, hosted by Gio, Jules and PK. Thanks for joining us. Lads, welcome to the show, the final one of the year.
Always good to be here on FNR, Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and around the world.
Last show, fellas. Very sad time, but it's been a good season.
How are you feeling about Sydney being sky blue?
Look, I'll speak very, very openly and very honestly. I think they did deserve to win. Look, it was very, very dull and boring affair, I'll be honest with you.
We didn't expect us to lie to us, all our listeners, so I'm glad you're honest with us.
Oh, I can if you want me to. But look, pretty
dull. Whenever someone starts a sentence and says, to be honest with you, that means you're going to lie to me, right? So you changed your mind, so I know you appreciate that, but mate, just be honest on the show.
All right, boss, no worries. Look, I think it was a pretty dull affair. I'm pretty sure we'll talk about it later on, but look, you know, they won the game. So
perhaps the worst game I got to watch
probably,
all year.
But, you know.
Can I just say, before we get into our awards for the year, the top five, I've loved doing the season with you both. And I said, PK, we're very proud of you, mate. You've put in a fantastic performance this year, and I think you've got stronger and stronger every week. And this other baboon on the right to me, Julesy, I think, mate, you're better than Rafiki. 90% of these commentators making a living out of this sport. So, mate, like I said, if we lose you one day, we'll be proud to say that you were once part of the football revolution. But if you go on to bigger, better things, we'll hate you, but we'll wish you the best.
It's a team game. I'm going nothing. Nowhere without the boys.
So today we've got a little bit of a special surprise for you, seeming it's awards night. It's our night of night. So we're all dressed up in our board shorts and our
tuxedos.
Yeah, and our favourite dress sandals. But
that's right.
We keep referring to you in all the interviews, PK, as our resident DJ. So I think you are going to do a
You've
bit of
You've got something
mixing.
Special for the evening, yes?
Well, I've been watching a few Las Vegas dance parties and festivals, so I thought, you know. Chuck a bit of sound effects in.
That's right. Well, we're trying something new.
We have been saying quite often through the year, we ask the our players on the players' lounge who controls the change rooms, who does that. Well, today we can tell you, PK's controlling the house, right? He's doing all the mixing and the DJing for us.
So PK in the house.
So are we going to tell the listeners what it is, or are we just going to sort of slide the music in as we go?
No, mate, I think...
I think each category still needs its title because it's been away all through the year, but we're loving the special effects edition that will
like
come
it.
With that, and it should come with the finals.
Definitely.
This has been a hard-fought-out contest all through the year, and I appreciate the listeners' feedback over our Twitter and Facebook pages. But
are we also in unison, lads, that we say bye-bye, hopefully, to round football fields? It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work, right?
We should probably start off, and before we get into those awards, we've got to address the final, and it was a painful one to watch. I think it deserved goals, and it was robbed of that chance with a horrendous decision, unfortunately consistent in the nature of the games and now grand finals. A shout-out to Perth. 56,000 fans. That is absolutely brilliant. However, let down once again by a field and pitch that was just not of the quality and standard that was required.
They played AFL on it 2 days before.
I have to say, it's
rubbish.
So my local shopping centre has an ice skating rink, and the good part about it is you can actually get your lunch, have your Hungry Jacks, and watch people do ice skating. I thought I was sitting down at my local shopping centre, and people might know what shopping centre this is, having my meal in the food court, watching everyone fall over.
At least we know where your diet is. It was horrible.
I was just in glad you can go through and tell us what you actually order and eat. It's only a 1 hour show.
Hungry Jacks, yes. There you go. Whopper
Look,
cheese.
As I said, you've got nowhere else to put 56,000. Optus Stadium's brand new. But once again, where the poor little brother, a game's played a couple of days before, the centre of the pitch where we expected some of the best footballers we have in Castro Ninkovic, we wanted to see quality football turning and doing... You couldn't.
I'll ask you both a question this. If that game was played at NRB Stadium where they played the whole season, is it a different result? Confidently.
I definitely think we would see goals.
Yeah?
No, I think that hats off to Sydney. They had prepared a game plan that was a better game plan than what Perth had planned. I don't think Perth played. Sydney played closer to their potential than Perth played to theirs.
It just seemed like as well. I know we talked about it last week, and I did think you were wrong about it. It was the time that the players weren't aware of the field, the dynamics, the dimensions. Feel like that they were a bit lost on the field. It didn't feel like it was a free flowing game of football that we kind of expected from both teams that have been demonstrating the whole year?
Well, it was as much an away game for Perth yep. as Sydney. The big thing was I did notice Sydney took a lot of their family and friends across for the players. I've spoken to friends of mine who were at the game in Perth as well, and he said, we don't go to all the games. We went to this because it was meant to be a big show. He's asked where he can send his receipt to the FFA to get his 3 hours yep. of life back.
So my opinion on that is if they play NIB Stadium, holds 20,000, right? So that should be, and we say, oh, we want to play with the bigger venues. But tough luck. If you're a member of the club, you get priority to go to the grand final. And if you're a part-time supporter and want to watch a one-off game, well, tough luck. Too bad. Watch at the pub, watch on TV. Tough luck.
But we are trying to grow the game. Yeah, we're hoping it's a catch 22.
If you come to a grand final and you enjoy it, you may next year become a ticket holder or go to more games. So I think you have to encourage those people. It's not like the Star Wars round where you're trying to get Chewbacca fans to come and start watching A-League every single week. It's a different proposition.
My problem is, a game was played 2 days before. I had to watch a grand final, so our premier game of the year, and all I could see on the ice skating rink was a centre bounce, a goal square, AFL 50-metre lines.
Correct.
That to me is not good enough.
So jumping the gun, if this was next year and we were doing an award, we'd definitely have the Oofuck Award, right? And that would be VAR/playing on AFL field. That'd definitely be a nomination, wouldn't it?
He's only
part of Sydney's coaching staff at the moment, but considering he would be the Phoenix coach next year, and just like we had the No High Five Gombau, definitely after Oofuck Talo, we could have the Oofuck Award, right? What's going on?
To look at it a bit more, had we had a better game, are we saying it was just the pitch or whatnot that probably robbed us of a better game? I think Tony Popovich probably got too cute for himself. You played...
Tony Jurgen Klopp Popovich?
Yeah, Tony Jurgen. I hope he continues that way.
Hopefully not.
But you've got your club captain. Andy Keogh is a goal scorer, target man.
What do you
and
guys
instead
think of
you
this
played
as an
two
idea?
Guys wide.
What do you think of this as an idea, guys? So, like, you obviously think that Optus was a bad option because it's a field that's...
You lose your competitive advantage.
Yeah, but it's built for AFL, right? Correct. It's also... The surface wasn't up to scratch and there's a million other things wrong with it. Champions League, for example, right, without going too far away from the A-League, they nominate at the start of the Champions League who's going to host that final, right? They pick a great venue. So, okay, at the start of the year, you say no matter who makes the final, it's at Bankwest Stadium or it's at this stadium, and you make sure 2 weeks beforehand there's no one on the field.
2 days
you're rolling
before.
It, you're watering it, everything's perfect, it's perfectly marked, it's branded with your stuff, and everyone knows that we're not booking anything for 2 weeks beforehand. There's no guessing who's going to be the host. Why?
No, won't work. Because we've got multiple codes in Australia. So let's go Bankwest as an example. There's three NRL teams that play. Let's say it was Bankwest this year. There's three NRL teams that play there. It's not going to work. Unless you play it on a Friday night and you get the first crack of the weekend. It's not working.
The interesting thing is that...
If you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Right. You say to the NRL, if that happens later on in your season, right, and it was the same with us and we got a normal game, we're happy to move a game away
for you. We know for a fact, not to go off topic, but the other codes will not help.
No other codes are helping.
They're not helping.
The interesting fact is, I think earlier in the week we heard Alex Bross come out and say maybe we should just get rid of the final series altogether. Align ourselves with the European
leagues. Does that mean we get rid of three championships that Sydney FC won?
No, but he did say I mean, that's someone who's won three, but it's a harsh way and he acknowledged them, and I thought it was a great grand final speech from a victorious captain. He acknowledged that Perth were the best side all year. They didn't turn it on in that. I don't think Perth probably played their final series at all. So the last couple of rounds, but certainly it was a long season. Perth had a brilliant season, and I think Popovich's backroom staff need to take their hats off because Perth were a bit like a broken wheel in previous seasons with Yosemite. They kept a lot of their players on the field at important times this year.
But you can't get rid of the final series until we get 16 or 18 teams.
You can't have it
when there's 10. Just forget about that.
What are you doing? You're going to throw another round in there so you play two homes and two aways. I mean,
no, you can't. Until we get to 16, 18, look, hopefully there's not a million years now between the third Melbourne team and third Sydney team coming in. Hopefully in the next, say, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, we get another two teams at least.
Well, I just think what they should do is, unless, and they can have, a variation with this, is whoever hosts the grand final, they play at their home ground. Unless, for example, let's say it's Sydney comes first and Wanderers comes second and it's 17 in the grand final, which is the way Wanderers are going, it's probably unlikely to happen. But then they say, all right, we've got the option to move it to an ANZ, we will know we'll get 80,000. But I think if Perth come first or Adelaide come first, play to their stadium. They want a competitive advantage to win the grand final, as opposed to they don't care about the, how many
it's
fans.
Very are. Old school though.
Yeah, no, but it is. But if they play, I'm telling you, if they play NRB Stadium, they win the game. I'll tell you right now.
They
win the game.
Do you tell me then? The other two major codes here, AFL and Rugby League, do they have home ground advantage in the grand final? No.
No, but that's they play the same stadium every year.
Yeah, but my
that's a nominated.
My feeling is though, we leave it very, very late to either take a punt or try and reserve when you have. It comes down to four sides that are in the semi final, and that game gets played 7 days later.
But what it does is,
and you're right, Jules, you're just hoping that the cards fall your way and you get lucky. But the other thing is too, if you know it's in the one venue, you can start looking at flights early, you can start looking at accommodation.
Correct.
Now you're sitting here trying to cover, okay, could I fly to Adelaide? Could I fly to Perth? Could I stay in Sydney?
And as it gets
to
the 90th minute, the flights start going up.
It has to be preset in advance.
So let's forget that. Let's get back onto the game quickly. Here's an interesting one. Turning point for the game.
Perth turning up for kickoff. they just weren't the same team. They were never going to win that game.
Yeah, as I was saying before, you drop Keogh, and then once you drop Keogh, Tony didn't have his target man. You're expecting Castro to maybe do something, but he's playing in that deeper role. You've got two very, very good players in Chianese and Economides, but they're the same player.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you were trying to left and right, having crosses in, and no one's there to receive it. I thought a little too cute trying to maybe change some tactics to upset Sydney FC, but they played exactly the same way.
That's called you've never won a grand final and you're nervous, so you change things around instead of sticking what's been tried and trusted for a whole season. So, you know what? Stick to what you know, and at least then if you get rolled,
it worked
9 out of 10 times.
The
Castro
Keogh combo is so strong out there. I just think he missed a trick, and if he had his time again, I think he would definitely do that. For me, when I say turning point, the game needed goals.
Yeah.
If VAR, for whatever reason, didn't get to see that, he didn't see it.
So you're saying, Jules,
get rid of that and make it 1-0 into half time. So that game ends 3-2, 3-1. We see goals and we see attacking football.
Do VAR have no access to that yellow line that you're telling us about?
From what I understand, VAR sees it in the imagery only, with no overlays, no, let's call it the Fox Sports line. There's no yellow line.
Ridiculous.
So basically VAR, being the forefront of technology, gets a Commodore 64 and a VCR tape to rewind and pause.
So why do all the punters like us get to see the correct vision with the lines? And the guy that needs to make the proper call doesn't get any technology at all.
There's two factors. It would come down to a factor of saying, well, how do we know that line's straight along the ground? Yes, but the other area is, and it's the comment that came back, VAR's there for Hauser, it wasn't definitive. Now, we're talking offside. There's no grey zone. You're offside. Yeah.
The disappointing thing is, and people might have forgotten last year, this is the second grand final in a row that's been marred by a VAR incident. So the Newcastle victory game last year, I mean, again, not to go off topic, there was another talking point.
We just won't learn. I think that was, 28 minutes in or something. Yep. That changes the grand final. It changes because all of a sudden Perth have to chase a game. Sydney FC have to either wear pressure or can break out and do that.
Close the game off.
But all it came down to, and I've always said, and sides that we've coached and we've played together, once you get to extra time, there has to be a certain element of risk, and you have to be prepared to lose a game in order to try and win it. And neither side was really prepared for that. I think Perth had a bit more ascendancy and they had more of the game. But we've just seen Sydney FC crowned A-League champions in the final with zero shots on goal.
Yep.
Yeah, look, guys, if we summarise that quickly before we get into our awards, everything that comes out, any technology in the last 50 years, right, gets tweaked and tinkered with, and eventually it becomes a better version. The Champions League Spurs versus City got the call wrong because they looked at the wrong angles, right? They didn't get to see all the right angles. You have the EPL actual league where they don't actually use VAR, right?
So
there was a handball between Spurs and City, which never went. Then here we have it and we get it wrong. So at the moment, it's not working whether we use it, don't use it, or whatever. We're getting wrong angles, wrong choices,
Do you think it's ruining the game that you've grown up playing without that technology, and we relied on referees to get it wrong or right?
Yeah, I would have worked with the the crawl before you walk and run, I would have gone first, definitely goal line technology, which is easy
which
to
is,
say.
Which is
the ball over?
Which is great.
The ball
I think it's, I think it's
the
great.
The last thing you want, right, is it looks like it bounced down and out, but you see it, but it almost hit the scoreboard, right? It bounced so far inside the goals and out.
Well, we just saw that that J-League side where he's hit the post off the side net and then the referees played it on.
Get it right. Get that right first and then start. You know what? I don't care if you even do it with under sixes, under tens, under 14s, and for a couple of years you try it on the side, right, of these games, right, where it doesn't really matter. You're not paying millions of dollars to players and fans and everything.
But we have got it right. So look, we look at the English Premier, right, being a passionate Liverpool fan, they actually, the difference in winning the league was by millimetre, and we look at the actual goals in the game.
God bless that technology.
Look, God bless it, but they were actually spot on. Imagine for whatever reason they overturned, they made wrong decisions there, then actually it was the difference between winning and losing the title.
Once again, we're talking about a grand final, and we've just filled about 4 or 5 minutes up with the wrong part of the subject, the VAR ruining it. We haven't talked about the yellow wiggle Redders. Big Red Mane turns up and saves Santalab, probably with the worst touch or the worst final touch for a retiring player in his professional career.
Apart from Zidane.
Will Zidane at least make contact? I don't know if you can count for that one. You know, Broski goes out a champion.
But not a great
way to go out. Terrible way to go out.
Let's be honest, if you miss the target or the keeper saves it or whatever, people go, okay, it's not great. But to take a risk like that, it's too big a risk.
The pitching wedge in the backyard.
Probably what's worse or what's more amazing is Sydney FC had the notes. Two simple words. Yeah. After Santalab, dink middle. Mm. So everyone knew. And we've gone and done it again.
Well, full credit to their goalkeeping coach.
Yeah, give it to Crawley. That's amazing. But
look, when you say we have talked about the VAR, which is disappointing because it's taken away, it hasn't taken away from a great game anyway. It was probably the most interesting part, talking about the VAR.
It was terrible.
It was a struggle.
Worst grand final I've seen in a while.
It was.
We need to learn from it. And don't start blaming the teams as well, because I think the pitch had a lot to do with it. I think the VAR had a lot to do with it. However, it was an average grand final when you expect those are hands down. No disrespect to victory, because that was a very close third.
The other thing we missed as well, and to add in, is that let's say, for example, this was broadcast, and I don't know if it was broadcast in other countries, and then watching and thinking, what league?
72 countries.
What league is this? I know, honestly, like, they're probably thinking, like, if we're trying to promote, oh, they've got these overseas players, these marquee buyers playing there, and these are the two best teams, and watching on this crap pitch where everyone's sliding around like they're at an ice skating ring, they're probably thinking...
How many people do you think walk out of there? Seriously. Like, obviously being, you know... tragic football fans, we watched the whole game and sat through it. How many people do you think in that 56,000 people sat there saying, God, I'm glad I came to this game?
Well, I would dare say there was a lot of families families
that flew over from Sydney. Was there any footage anyone knows?
$760 for a flight later and whatever, everyone says it's worth it. I don't think I would have paid over $1,000 to go and watch that game. Forget that.
Yeah.
Anyway. I'd rather buy tickets to some other sporting event and go and watch that.
Watch the West Coast Eagles playing Friday night.
At least the pitch would have been better, Nick. Correct. At the end of the day, again, congratulations to Stevie Corriker and Sydney FC. Alex Bross, you've gone out with the dream. You've gone out with the title around your neck. So that was brilliant.
Which he deserves. So
that's a career like that deserves it. Commiserations to what is arguably and easily to win that argument. The best side all year was Perth Glory. They were the most consistent. Unfortunately, we see it all too often that consistency hits a wall towards the end. Yep. And I think that's kind of where they did. And they robbed themselves of a couple of goals and opportunities. So,
all right.
We've now got our big awards. We've gone through all year.
Can't wait. My fingers are getting
hit. Yeah, DJPK.
So what's the first one we're going to go over? Is it the...
Well, we've always got to go with our first, and it's the clay statue. And finally, have you got it out of the drawer? We've polished it up.
It's the...
I'll be honest.
Did I jump into earlier then?
I think you did. I think you got a bit excited. It is the goal of the year. It is the Berisha goal of the year. But nice to see PK's very excited. That's the level of our technology that we have here.
I don't know, polishing up the Berisha clay statue can make it look any better.
No, I don't think so.
It's not an attractive looking award, but it's still very pretty.
I believe you did drop it and glue it back together and it actually looks the same. So it's all there. There was, I think, two main players that we ended up with, and that was the Delats goal against Brisbane Roar against, I think, Lopez's...
Lopez
from the Brisbane Roar against Central Coast Mariners, that peach of a strike there. We've had a lot of responses from it. We've debated it plenty of times. I'm going to let Gio come up with our absolute goal of the year according to the Football Revolution.
Yeah, look, I think he has now left the Roar. So both players were, I know Delatt's left the league. I'm not sure if Lopez has left the league.
We'll have to meet them at the airport with this award.
We might have to go on a bit of an explorer mission and find him. But the winner of the 2018-19 the Football Revolution Clay Statue Award for Goal of the Year is Lopez, Alex Lopez.
Yep. Absolute cracker of a goal too. Well deserved. The adjustment on that, clean strike.
Technique, no problem. Yeah. No dramas.
And the fact that it left everyone stunned with it as well.
The only downside is there's nowhere really anywhere he can go from here. This is the highest award he will ever achieve.
Right. That's right.
So I think he knew that. He maybe subconsciously knew he was getting that award, and he thought, you know what? Mission accomplished in the A-League.
I'm done.
We didn't make the playoffs.
But I'm going to win the Goal of the Year.
I got Goal of the Year award right. from the
And
boys,
he's even stolen it from another departed Raw man with Botek, who I think was voted by some other punters for his little bicycle in the same game, mind you.
And the award's after the great Berisha as well, who's also a Brisbane man. So we've kept it in all orange. Just
keeping it in the family there. We move along onto, you know, we talk about goals. Now we talk about the men who have to save them. And this goes into our Bozza Award, the Golden Gloves. Our save of the year. What do you got for us, DJ?
What a save!
There you go. I hope no one's deaf from that one, but it was what a save. Again, we've got the two finals. We had Andrew Redmayne, the big Redbeard, Captain Redbeard.
Yep.
And I think the other one was coming in second to choose from.
Curto save.
Yep. Pretty hard to tell who's going to win that, but I think when we had a look at them again today, it's hard to go past the quality of. Do you want to go again? You're all right?
No, I'm all good. No, I'm just getting ready for the next one.
To go past just the quality and speed that was required from Andrew Redmayne. Yeah. He's just won a title, and now he can add, which is a bit higher, I feel, the Football Revolution save of the year, and that's that save against. Well, it was originally said as Roston Griffiths, but we all know it as Riley McGree, the Scorpion Kid. It was struck so well, it was saved before the camera could catch up, and that was going top corner. So I thought it was a brilliant, I think it was a left-hander one.
If you guys did your research and had paid attention to the weekend, I think you would have realised that Redmayne, when he was doing that bit of a dance in the penalty shootouts, because he actually heard through the earpiece, Crawley had told him, "You've won the save of the year for the Revolution," right? So he was jumping around. He couldn't control his excitement. Now, ideally, he wanted to just run off and ring us and say, "Thank you very much." But they said, "You must stay in for the penalty shootout."
So I was wondering why it was kept going. It kept beeping during the thing. So I think it was Crawley was screaming, saying, "What are you doing, Redders?" He's dropping a few.
I was just wondering, because we watched it again today, and Redders' beard was a lot less shaggy in that save. So was maybe he was doing the dance there just knowing that if I save a couple more penalties, I finally get to have a shave.
Yeah.
Because this thing's getting itchy and heavy.
Yeah, look, well, I think it was a fantastic save. And considering how well he did in the shootout, and look, on the back of him, they won the shootout and they won the grand final. So, congratulations to Andrew Redmayne, a deserved winner. Considering he is probably the hottest field, considering all the great keepers we have in the A-League this year.
It certainly is a prestigious award against the keepers that were all year. It was a hard one to go with. And we'll move on to our and your favourite topic, Gio. We did start with a name at the start of the year. However, due to how well Muskie did. Look at this. DJ's going off a bit early. It is our Goose of the Year award. And we did start it off with Muskie, but Muskie really trimmed in this year. And I thought, again, a brilliant season. And we'll call out to him later on.
Well, he's retired. He's stepped down from the country anyway. So you can't really name him.
We can't call it. And he didn't go any bananas this year. Mate, so.
But the curse continues.
The curse
Every
does
time
continue.
Every time we give an award,
it gets replaced.
The Brandan time.
See you later.
Yeah, gone. We bought the high five, Gombau.
Gone.
Who else did we have? We had something. Some other awards as well.
Oh, mate, we're the curse of everyone at the moment.
Even when we even sing, hey, Fornaroli.
They tried
everything later to get rid of him, right? And he held on. So
into the unnamed. So this is actually very important, Gio, and I hand it over to you because this will be
he's pumped
the
honor.
New name for our Goose of the Year. With one of the most terrible sound effects that we've come across just before. But anyway, I'll give you 2 out of 10 for that one. Gio,
I hate to wreck this for the listeners, but that was actually PK's voice. That wasn't actually talking. Yeah, that actually wasn't. That was him talking that was to actually, a girl on the phone last week.
That was actually his first footage. That was his first audition to us. That was his testing audition with us. So look how well we've done.
So there was two clear candidates for the Goose of the Year. So the first one being, and look, I think he was nominated for quite a few of our awards. The first one being Mr. Bortiak. He just seemed to be in the right place at the right time, the wrong place at the wrong time, the right place at the wrong time. He was just everywhere. So
Pick a time.
He could have won Goal of the Year. I think he did win Goal of the Year.
He did with the pundits from the A-League or Fox Sports panellists.
Yeah, quite often he featured in our Good, Bad and Ugly. And then he was also quite often in the Goose of the Week awards. So, look, I think he was a pretty clear standout candidate. And the other one who I just can't go past, I've said this word more, and it's in the dictionary now, just so you know. It's been added to the dictionary. Yen Yedagus. So Yen Yedagus, by far and away, I think, has beaten Bortiak just simply because our Goose of the Year, and now named that award, the Goose of the Year, the Yen Yedagus Award, goes to Vedran Yen Yedagus himself.
For consistent goosery.
Oh,
at least four rounds.
Well, look, this is when I knew that when you guys said, look, we're not quite sure who we're going to give it to, this is when I knew, because all of a sudden the front runner for it was him. Then someone else sort of comes along, then he beats himself, then he beats himself again, then he gets another nomination, then we go, hang on, that was amazing, that one. I thought his previous one. So
PK should be happy that the Wanderers have actually won something this year.
Over the moon.
Be pretty happy about that. In the interest of moving on, we may have cursed Yen Yeds now, but we'll see how he goes for next year. You should be following the show. We have our, and I'm not sure whether we have too much of a soundtrack for this, given that it is the best reaction from fan, coach, player, ball boy,
mascot.
Canteen mascot.
I'm praying that he has Ned Zelich working at Macca's drive-thru. Would you like fries with that? Fries? Would you like fries? Cookies? Fries? Fudge? Coke? Meal? Just a meal or a burger?
There you go. That's a sound effect.
We did. That's not bad. You can't beat that. We did call this the Ned Zelich Award because good old Ned does get a little bit excited up in the stands.
We love
Ned when he goes, especially when he talks about his favourite subject, which is also the one we hate, which is the...
I thought he was going to talk when you say he loves talking about himself.
Oh, well, who doesn't? Yeah. Our two, who have you got for us, Jay? I think our two finalists that we would choose between.
So our two finalists for our favourite reaction pretty much by anybody. So the first one was the Troisi Call Me Baby. So he, when he was left
or
out.
Call Me Maybe.
When he was left out of the Australian squad and he was pretty dirty about that, he made it very clear to everyone in Australia that he was waiting for a phone call.
To be fair, he played a scintillating month of football too. That was a real show.
And the other finalist in the category is, and pretty, I suppose, pretty appropriate considering that the Galtex commercial was when Castro and Keogh did the old oil check on the field. Now, maybe that was product
that was
placement. Maybe that was product placement. Maybe Caltex had asked them.
With the Caltex fuel commercial.
When you score a goal, make sure that you go over and do an oil check on the old Castro. Three-stroke Castro.
That's what it was for sure.
So, yeah, look, I think unfortunately for the boys from Perth, the boys from the West,
I think they've lost
again.
Another one.
Yeah, they've run up again. They've run out
it's
of
hard to
gas
go past
again.
The, yeah, call me maybe.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that was probably what was missing from victory in their run into the final series. But they missed that. Troisi takes a pressure off Honda and allows Honda to sort of do his own thing. When he's not there, you go, just mark him.
Yeah,
that's right. And as I said, he did have a super month of football that month, not to take anything away from the rest of the year, but he really did move into that key spot when Honda was out injured, and he proved that probably he would have been a handy call up, given that we were struggling to find openings and goal opportunities in the Asia Cup of the time. So,
and Troisi, if you do that again, say call me, and you say it to the Football Revolution,
we'll definitely call you. 100%.
No problem. No, you won't be waiting very long. While you're doing it on the field, your phone will be ringing in your bag.
And that brings us to our final award for the evening, major award. It's a big one. It's a major award. There's been many players here. It's a very convoluted one when we go through it. And that is the good, bad, and I think given the way we've done this, Gio, there is only one that's had its hands up all day. It did get a couple of probably challenges, but
hey, it's the award.
Hard to go past. It is the award that everyone's fought hard for.
DJ PK.
Yes, Gio.
Great mixing, by the way, mate.
Not
very,
bad, isn't
very
it?
Very impressive.
About one out of 40.
No, amazing. Great job. Look, I think rather than go through and just give, you know, usually we say two teams and we do give a good, bad and the ugly. What we thought would be easiest was, and just summarise it in one bag for everyone, is any team that has ugly sauce bottles at their ground, they try and sign players that aren't even footballers at the start of the year.
Ugly preseason.
They sack their coach at 1 a.m. in the morning. The list goes on and on and on. I think, thank God, we did get an award for Stads because we really like him. And when he thought he was going to get an award, maybe he thought FFA Cup or, I don't know, maybe Asian Champions League instead.
Well, this does give them a double for the season.
It does.
He has won the 2018-2019 award, the Roy O'Donovan, the good, bad, and
the ugly.
Yeah. It might as well just be...
Goes to Central Coast Mariners.
Central Coast Mariners and their captain, Central Coast John... Simon, what's his name? Matt Simon, whatever his name
Aussie
is.
Aussie Homelands.
He can come up and get the award for them, but it just would have been like 3 votes, Central Coast, 2 votes, Central Coast, 1 vote, Central
Usain Bolt.
Coast. they just appeared way too many times. Yeah. We would say, started off the game, good, started off the game, okay. Then they fell into pieces.
How often do we hear, what a great first half and we lost 6-0? Yeah. No, that's them to a T this season. I really hope Stage gets a good off-season and turns it around. That brings an end to our Football Revolution top five.
For the season.
Those who have won this year should be very, very honoured. And hopefully the rest of the competition's got their... Get the game face on for next year because these are prestigious awards to win.
Do I get any award for absolutely spanking DJ PK?
Well, you know what? There is an award. I'll do your 50th birthday for free at no cost. How about that?
That's a very nice step.
You've only got a few months to organise it.
No way.
You've only had time, mate.
We might have a break. We'll take up your award discussion. And when we come back, we'll be back in the Players' Lounge for our final interview of the year with George Mells.
Welcome to the Football Revolution, hosted by Gio, Jules and PK.
Welcome back to the Football Revolution. Joining us in the Players' Lounge tonight is a young man with a super impressive CV, previously being at Chelsea, Southampton, as well as Adelaide United, now in Holland. Please welcome to the show, George Mells. Thanks, George. Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, no worries, guys. All good. Thank you for having me.
Mate, we really appreciate having you on the show. And like I said, mate, at the moment, I'm starting to feel a little bit older than I already am, considering you're only a 21-year-old midfielder with a fantastic CV. We'll get into that a little bit later. Mate, firstly, tell us a little bit. So you are currently playing in Holland. You're back home at the moment. How are you enjoying being back in Australia?
Yeah, it's good. Obviously, I left when I was very young. I was 11 when I left Melbourne. And, you know, I haven't lived here since then. I've obviously been here to visit. So it's fantastic to be home around family and stuff. Yeah, I'm just trying to enjoy it whilst it lasts. Because obviously in the game, you never know where you'll end up and you're always on the move. So, yeah, to answer your question, I'm loving it at the moment and I'm just really looking forward to my next adventure as well.
I'm pretty sure the family will be loving having you home too at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they've missed out on so much time growing up, so it's good to make up that time now. I've been loving every minute of it, to be honest.
Mate, nickname, what do the boys call you in the change rooms or on the pitch? What do they refer to you as?
Just call me Melzy, man. Just... use my last name as my nickname. It's always been a thing since I was young, since I was at Chelsea and stuff. So I think it kind of stayed with me through there, and I think everyone just picked up on it.
So you're happy with that name, or is there something else you'd prefer them to call you?
No, I'm satisfied with that. I'm very satisfied.
Funniest football story or experience?
Oh,
can be on the pitch, off the pitch.
PG though.
Yeah, PG would be good.
I mean, that's where your mind goes to one place straight away, so I've got to keep this for all the kids listening. Oh, guys, you're putting me in a...
If you can't think of one, we can come back to it.
Yeah, let's come back to it. That's very difficult.
Yeah, we'll put an easy one to him. Have you been watching much A-League while you've been back?
You know what? I have. Yeah, I've been actually watching it quite a bit. I've always been very interested in the A-League. So I've been watching it. I think it's very different to when I was playing in it. I see there's noticeable changes every season in terms of like the level, everything, crowds, everything. Everything's a lot different to when I was playing, to be honest.
And who would your favourite team be?
I like the way Perth play. I think that's the easiest answer. I mean, everyone would say Perth at the moment. But let's probably take them out of the equation. I don't mind the way Adelaide play. I like the way the coach sets up his team. They're very aggressive. They're on the front foot. So, yeah, I'd say between Perth, Adelaide, around those two teams.
Yeah, they'd have to have a soft spot, the Adelaide side. Would you be able to tell me who your favourite A-League player of the season has been?
I've liked watching Chris Economides. He's, you know, he's very exciting to watch. Different, you know. Someone who's very attacking-minded and he's got no fear to dribble. So it's very valuable to obviously play with someone like that. So I'd say Chris. Yeah, he's been really good.
He's been an important player for Perth as well, and probably part of the reason they've been so attacking and enjoyable to watch too. So
yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah.
Now, I know you're back in Oz and we've been having a joke around and we'd love to see you playing a bit more. On the season you've watched, is there a side that you would pick out of the A-League that would fit your playing style or that you think you could best suit? It's a loaded question, isn't it?
Yeah, it's difficult because then you see around the league there's a lot of coaching changes and everything. So often quite depends on what coaches come into the clubs and how they want to set up. Look, obviously I played at Adelaide and their style has always been, you know, something that I've been used to, because more or less, no matter which coach comes in there, the philosophy of the club sort of stays the same. But they like to play attacking football. But look, honestly, guys, I really couldn't pinpoint one. Like, more or less, the clubs in the top half of the table play more or less the same sort of style of football. Some just have a few more quality players to make it work. So I really couldn't pinpoint one. I'd say, Adelaide, because they're the club I played for.
Well, we'll stick with the Adelaide or Perth. That's not a bad couple of squads to slot into if you get the opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, to be honest with you, at the moment, for me, the most important thing is just getting minutes. I think at this age, you know, when you start hitting, you know, 21, 22, even all the way up to 24, you've got to be playing. Yeah, you've got to be playing regularly. I mean, if you've got that aspirations of going to the higher level, you know, your aim's got to be to play.
Mate, I'm pretty sure that any of these A-League clubs would take you, so I think it'd be a really easy decision. But what do you like to do away from football, mate? What do you enjoy to do?
I like to go for coffees. I like to, because I'm from
like
Melbourne.
A true Melbournean.
Exactly. I like to go for coffees. Having one right now.
What's your favourite coffee? What do you drink, George?
I like drinking lattes or cappuccinos. Keeping it simple. Nothing too out there. Just simple.
Do you want to give someone a plug? Where do you get your best coffee from in Melbourne?
Oh, I don't mind Doc Espresso in Lygon Street. Don't mind Brunetti as well. More for the atmosphere, to be honest with you. But yeah, not a bad coffee as well.
When you say atmosphere, checking out the scenery.
Yeah, pretty much.
Come on, Pego, don't throw him under the bus.
I have to ask a question. He's a Greek, you know. These are the things we ask.
Of course, the only Greek in this room here is asked you that question.
Of course. I wouldn't expect anything else.
Neither would we.
Mate, a chance for you to name and shame someone. Worst roommate on away trips.
Oh, wow. Let me think back to Adelaide. I'm trying to think. There was a sleepwalker. I'm trying to think who it was.
Maybe you?
No, I wonder if it was Bruce Kamau. No, there was a sleepwalker. I don't know, maybe Jordan Elsie or Bruce Kamau, someone like that. There was one of the two, I think, was a sleepwalker. But yeah, they were. I think one of them two.
So you had to padlock the doors, did you? When you room with them?
You want to make a quick exit.
We'll leave that nice and open. It's either Bruce or someone else, but see if Brucey rings the show and tells us it wasn't him.
Yeah, I probably got it wrong. I know there was someone for sure who sleepwalks, and they're probably both going to ring up and say it wasn't me. So I don't know, but I've got a feeling it was one of them too.
I've got a left field question for you. If you could go on one reality show, what would it be? Is there an inner cook within you, or are you thinking about going to the
home
beach?
Renos or something.
Fantasy Island.
Put you on The Bachelor.
Did you say Love Island?
Yeah, Fantasy Island, Love Island. X on the beach.
Yeah, you know what? God, Love Island would be too much drama for me. I don't know. How about The Block? I wouldn't mind going on The Block.
Yeah, not bad. Yeah, nice and fun.
Yeah.
Put a bit of hard work in there, fun. Yeah?
I'd go with my mum, though, because she'd do all the work for me.
Oh, perfect. So look at that, yep. the Greek man in there. He knows how to outsource.
I'm definitely jumping in and keeping you away from all those bachelor and dating shows, mate. You're going to make a name for yourself in football. You don't need to go and try and make one through those trashy avenues, mate. You're too good for that.
Yeah, I've got to rise above it.
Way above.
We go back towards the dressing room, and before a game, what's your pump-up music? What's the songs that get you ready to play?
Good question, actually. I've got a playlist actually going on at the moment. I've got all sorts on there. I've got a game day mix. I like a bit of Drake before the game. He gets me going a bit. It's not more so the songs or anything. It's just I like his type of music. It gets me focused and sort of in the zone to play.
So a game day mix, does that make you the dressing room DJ?
No, I don't like being a DJ. I just like having my own headphones on and kind of listening to my own stuff. Because some of the stuff the boys have been playing, especially when I've been overseas, it's terrible.
Dutch trash, is it?
Absolutely. Dutch terrible. Techno. Yeah. Oh, mate. Half of it's not in English either. So you're just like, what is this? You got your own stuff. Back in the A-League, I was never one to be in charge of music because not everyone's a fan of everyone else's type of music, so I just kind of have my own headset, listen to my... I like sort of hip-hop, rap, those sort of things, so that's what I sort of listen to.
Mate, sounds like a good mix. I wouldn't mind getting a copy of the old George Melzi mix, so...
Oh, yeah, I could forward it to you later.
It's mate, on his Spotify, check his Spotify.
Yeah, flick it down, mate.
Melzi's mixtape.
Just follow my Spotify playlist.
There you go, Melzi's mixtape.
And, mate, what meal would you cook if you're trying to impress someone? Now, I knew that you said you'd go take your mum on the show. You can't use your mum this time, right? So she's out. What would you cook?
Okay. I think my powers are limited, very, very limited. I can barely make toast for myself.
No Uber Eats either. You can't give that answer.
I'd probably cook some sort of pasta dish.
Yeah, nice and safe.
Would it include lamb?
Nah, too complicated. My powers are limited.
You get pasta and a bit of
pasta, Kraft cheese.
You Beautiful. Can have a bit of cheese, yeah.
Perfect.
You can have a bit of cheese. I'll allow a bit of cheese.
Excellent. And we haven't forgotten, and I'm going to throw you under the bus here a little bit, your funniest football story experience. There's surely something you can tell the viewers and us as well.
Oh, jeez. The only thing I can think of off the top of my head is when we dropped the grand final trophy in the nightclub, and it got a massive dent in it.
That's good enough. We like this.
Did it knock the vodka bottles over?
Yeah, we're in, I can't remember. I think we're 2KW, and we're going up in the lift into this, rooftop bar / club, and then we got up to the top. I don't know who was holding it. I don't know if it was a player or one of the staff, and like all you hear is just a big bang, and I went down the stairs, and it was the premier's plate, and luckily it was the duplicate, so lucky it wasn't the real thing, because I think we'd be in a bit of strife, but that was pretty funny, especially when you're drunk.
Mate, were you overage then? Are we getting you in trouble here?
No, I was 18 when I was playing there. It's okay.
I knew you went there roughly around 17, so I was just trying to do the maths, and I just want to make sure we haven't just got you in big trouble now.
And he didn't say
drunk. No, all good. I can confirm I was 18 after the grand final.
He wasn't drunk. He was socially lubricated and enjoying the night.
Yeah, pretty much. We'll go with that.
And drop the dunny door down the stairs. So.
and I can confirm it wasn't me that dropped the trophy, all right?
That's all right then.
We love that, mate. You had that up your sleeve all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know if it was funny enough, but if you've enjoyed it, I'll take it.
Oh, no, dropping whatever everyone works for the entire season, it's pretty amusing.
So, mate, now I'll pass over to PK. He'll have a few serious football questions for you. What do you got, PK?
We'll try and be as serious as we can here after that opening part of the interview. Melzi, you spent some time in your youth career at Chelsea and Southampton. Let's focus with Chelsea first. How did that come about? I mean, how did you end up getting picked up by Chelsea?
To be honest with you, originally, I didn't go to England to play for them originally. I was going to go play for Reading through a guy who saw me play here. And he just invited me over. He's one of the academy coaches there. And he just invited me to come over for a month and to train. And I stayed with him. Obviously, I was very young. So I went over there and I was training with them. And we just happened to play like a friendly game, or it was one of their regular season games against Chelsea. And I did really well. And they pretty much wanted to take me straight after the game. So I made the switch over to Chelsea. And that's really, honestly, that's how I came back. It was that simple. It was obviously a lot of luck came to it, but obviously you had to do something to impress them as well. So yeah, that is pretty much how the story went. A lot of people are expecting a very big and complicated story when they ask me, but it's honestly as simple as it gets. I played against them and they liked me.
And your time at Chelsea, did you spend any time there with any notable players that are playing in the Premier League now or have gone on to other ventures?
I mean, obviously you see all the first team players. So like you got your chance to meet like the Drogbas and the Lampards and the John Terrys and all them. And it was all fantastic. But there was a few young guys who like lived close to me, and One guy in particular who took me under his wing a bit, because he lived right next door to me, was Patrick Van Aanholt, who plays left back at Crystal Palace now. And like, he was someone that always, you know, would come see how I was doing, would always take me out with him as well. So he was someone that was I spent a bit of time with, and I got to know him. And obviously now he plays every week in the Premier League. So obviously he's, you know, done very well for himself. So yeah, he'd be someone I'd really like, stands out for me.
And how did it work over there? Did your parents or someone move across, or were you in sort of a shared house for the juniors?
When I was at Chelsea, because I was very young, I was about 11 until 14 years of age. My parents, my family was there. Me, my sister, and my parents were there. But then when I was 14, I obviously transferred over to Southampton, and that's when they make that decision to say, okay, look, 14 now, the club are willing to take you in as like a full-timer and to put me in the, like a care family, we call them Digs. And I stayed there full-time from when I was 14. So I've been away from them for a long time. Obviously, I've seen them in between seasons and whatever, but it's definitely helped me in the long run, though.
Yeah, well, it's very impressive for a young fella. That's a lot to take on.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think at that age, though, it doesn't really register. So when you're that young, you're kind of caught up in the moment of playing at a Premier League club in the academy, and everything's wonderful and everything. But I think you don't appreciate how big it is until you get a little bit older, like I am now, and you kind of think, oh, you know, it's a big deal.
And you touched on Southampton. You spent more time at Southampton. What were the notable differences between the academies? Was there anything particular that stood out from one or the other?
It's a different mentality, how the academies are run. So Chelsea's built on guys with that sort of winning mentality and drive, and guys with, best way to put it, almost like the sort of like Paul Pogba attitude, you know, like we're above everyone else, you know. These guys know they're good and they act like it, and that's how they want their players to be. Because to play for a club like that, you have to be like that. Whereas at Southampton, it was more, they're like the more down-to-earth sort of guys, guys who worked hard, didn't speak too much. They were the noticeable differences, but in terms of results, they're both the same. They're the two best academies in England. They always have been. One's known for winning everything. One's known for producing a lot of senior footballers. Two great experiences. I wouldn't change them for anything.
Mate, surely, you know, having Chelsea and Southampton as your two clubs would have given you a lot of confidence before you came back to Adelaide, considering they are two of the best, if not the best, youth setups, and they were both, you know, very interested in you.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt Chelsea's the best youth academy in the world across all age groups. That's a fact. They always have been. I think they always will be. Southampton is one of the best in a different way. So that was fantastic. And it did, yeah, it gave me a lot of confidence coming back. But I wasn't originally supposed to come back. I was going to go over to Holland. I had a contract offer there, one with Feyenoord, one with Sparta Rotterdam. I was actually just here on holidays, and we got a phone call from Josip Gombau asking us to come up and train with the team. And I was very reluctant at first, if I'm being honest. It was never in my... I can honestly say it was never an ambition for me to come here and play. Because I grew up over there, and obviously that European football is attractive to a lot of players. So honestly, it was through the advice of my father to go there, to at least give it a go. And I ended up liking it in the end. And I ended up signing there. And like you said, it did give me the confidence, having been in Europe, to go there and to try and do well.
It was also probably a good move in your career, and you're part of the 2016 championship winning side. And I know you sort of had a part to play in the final series, and you know, you managed to get on the field in the grand final as well. So I mean, that would have been an awesome experience for you as a young fella coming through, playing with some of the players like SAS and Kamau, and you know, some of the guys that are still playing in the A-League at the highest level.
Yeah. I mean, look, when I signed at Adelaide, I knew, you know, this wasn't youth football anymore. It's first team football. It's different. Straight away, I found it a little bit difficult to adapt, because obviously physically it's different. But honestly, during the course of preseason, I adapted well. I had those sort of players around me. I think the midfielders at the time were very, very good, so they helped me a lot. And when you're at that age as well, you know, if you've got quality guys around you, your game's going to grow. So, like you said, like the midfielders then, Isaias, I think Jimmy Jago and Marcelo Kruska was there as well. You know, those guys, you know, I looked at them and I saw the level and the physicality they could play to. So it just kind of just pushed me to just up my game and to improve almost.
Did you find when you stepped to the A-League out of the developments of Southampton and Chelsea that it was a lot more demanding athletically rather than maybe football tactically?
Yeah, so I agree. So physically, when you step into first team football anywhere around the world, it's different straight away. You know, it's, you know, the physicality, especially the A-League compared to youth football in the UK. I mean, UK football he's always physical. Everyone has known that. But when you're playing with men, it's different. You know, they hit you harder. They make you run faster. You need to be able to run for longer. You always got to be aware of what's going on around you. So you kind of have to adapt to that. And that was difficult. I've got to be honest with you. It was difficult. It took some games to get used to. But once you get the hang of it and you get used to it, it's like anything else. It becomes normal, second nature.
Melzy, can you tell us? So, look, it's an immense, you know, immensely pride for someone to represent their country, right? So in your case, you've not only represented Australia under 17s, but then also your heritage, which is Greek. You've represented Greece and then gone back to Australia. Can you just tell us a little bit about, like I said, anyone representing their country is an honour, but then to represent both countries, it just must be something totally different.
Yeah, it was a great experience. Look, obviously I'm born in Australia, you know, so I'm Australian. At the end of the day, I know I've got the Greek heritage, but I see myself as an Australian, always have. We went there more for the experience. And it was a very good experience. At the time, I was situated in England, in Southampton. So, you know, to get on a plane and come all that way to Australia all the time was very difficult to do that, especially when I'm playing every week for my club. Over there, the schedule's a bit different to youth football in Australia. Like, we're competing maybe 2-3 times a week in games and going to competitions. So it was very difficult for me to just jump on a plane and come to Australia. And sometimes it's difficult for them to see me, so they don't know whether they're going to call me up or not. So I just made the decision, just... why not? Greece got in contact. They contacted my club, and I'm sure I remember at the time that the FFA weren't too happy about it. But I just said to them, I made it clear to them, I'm just going there for the experience. It'd be nice to, you know, for once in my life, maybe experience a Greek national team. So I've always got that with me in my memory, because obviously that's where my ancestors are from.
Yeah, fantastic, mate. Like I said, yeah, just from our point of view, mate, we just look at that and just think, you know, very, very lucky. And then obviously you've now made your alliances to Australia, and I think that's just a huge positive for Australian football.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Just sort of moving on, I know obviously you said you're back in Melbourne and you still are quite, quite young at your age and your professional career. I mean, do you have any ambitions to come back and play in the A-League?
Of course. I mean, where I've been situated now for the last couple of years in Europe has been wonderful. But, as you see with a lot of Australian guys, they sort of, you know, hit a brick wall around that 2021 mark if they've gone over to Europe at an early age. And you just kind of need a... reset yourself and kind of get some stability again. So I would honestly love to play in the A-League for the next 2 to 3 years, because I'd love to play regular football. I've had the experiences of playing the A-League before. I've had the experience of being overseas and playing. So I've got all that experience behind me at a reasonably young age. So yeah, of course, I'd love to use those experiences to come back here and to do very well again. And then after those 2-3 years, depending on how I do, what happens. Obviously, All young players have that ambition of going as high as they can. But for sure, for the time being, my focus is to be back home.
Are you surprised in the time since you played A-League and won the title there to being back now and watching it this year, that we haven't been able to move any further forward with a potential second tier or a second level of competition here, and that we've been kind of very slow in growing the A-League to be more teams? I mean, we've only got one coming in next season, then another after that. But surely, I mean, you as a player when you left must have thought that the A-League was at a point where it would grow quite rapidly.
Yeah, look, you could say it's surprising. I mean, a lot of people would argue it's not surprising, but we won't get into that. Look, you would have thought by now at least there was more teams in the A-League. I mean, by now you should at least have either one, a second division, or two more teams in the A-League. I think that's the best way for me to answer it. I'm a bit surprised that hasn't happened yet. I mean, I think it's in everyone's best interest to get more teams involved, at least professionally. I think there's a lot of clubs in the NPL system around Australia who would be ready to take that professional status. The likes of, you know, South Melbourne and, whether it's Oakley or wherever, even RPO in Sydney or Adelaide City or Brisbane Strikers, whatever, anywhere around Australia, there's teams that are ready to take that professional status.
You've probably got clubs that are all desperate to get a chance there. So, yeah.
Yeah, you'd assume so. I mean, I think any team will jump at the opportunity to become professional, especially at these levels. You know, I'd love to see it happen. Better sooner rather than later, but I hope that does happen too, because you want to see the game grow here like it has in England over the past few years. And I'd love to see it grow. Like, you know, I think that anyone who follows football here wants to see that happen. They want the best for football.
Mate, you got three people who definitely agree with that in this room here, mate. We totally think there needs to be a second tier as well as more teams in the A-League, so they don't have to play each other 46 times each year. So
more opportunities for the youth as well, and growing our talent here.
Yeah, exactly.
Biggest influence on your career to date, Melzi?
I've got a few. My father is the main one because, you know, he used to train me 2-3 times a day from a young age. And without those hours, I don't even know where to begin with that. So I'll say my father. Second one would be my coach from Chelsea, Michael Beall, who's gone on to obviously a lot bigger things since then. He's with Steven Gerrard now at Rangers as his assistant. So he's someone I've always leaned on for advice and for guidance in my career. And he's more often than not been spot on. Even the times when I haven't listened to him, he's always proven to be correct. So definitely Michael. And also my coach Adelaide, Guillermo Moore, someone who I still speak to this day. He's played a big, big part of my career and obviously gave me my chance as a young professional. And someone who believed in me when maybe other people didn't as well. Not many people expected me to make so many appearances in my first year. And he had full belief in me. And he believed in what I could do and what I could produce on the field. And he was right.
It's a good list there, mate.
Yeah.
Final question for tonight, Melzi. If you could change one decision in your career, what would it be?
Oof, jeez.
Yeah, one nice easy one to finish off.
Yeah. I probably would have stayed in the A-League for a bit longer, to be honest. Because see, with so many young guys, we sort of leave the A-League, we have a bit of success, we go over there. I think you've seen it over the years. I don't mean to call out anyone at the moment. I have a lot of respect for all my teammates, ex-teammates, guys I played with. But you've seen, even now, like with myself, you've seen it in recent times with, you know, Danny Silva, Steph Mork, Craig Goodwin, Terry Antonis. Like, you know, they all hit like a brick wall and they say, okay, look, I need a reset. So they all revert back to the A-League. So the argument could be made, if we all stayed here a bit longer in the first place and gone on at an age where we were fully matured and ready for that jump, you kind of save yourself a bit of time in that sense. So I would probably say maybe I've stayed in the A-League for a bit longer. Just so, because I just think now just getting minutes is so much more valuable than just jumping at any opportunity that comes across you. And you see now with all those guys, you know, when they play, they do very well. Like Terry Antonis' game has grown massively, like he's been very good to watch at Victory. So I think when you look at guys like that, especially, I think it makes you think, well, maybe the smarter option is stay here for a bit longer, bide your time a bit, and kind of trust the system a bit. I know you can say it's a bit cliche or whatever, but really it does work. Just have the patience, put in the performances, and someone will come in for you.
Well, that's very, very wise words from a young man like that to have a look forward and see that, you know, maybe the move to big bright lights isn't always as good once you get there, and that you want to make sure you're getting those game time and minutes. Minutes is gold when you're a young player as well, as you said. Hopefully then we're waiting with bated breath and ears open. There could be a big decision or a bit of news coming out soon, and we might get your wish and our wish to get another fine talent back in the A-League, and you can take on the likes of the Antonis and Mork and all the boys there who might be fearing you coming back. But there'll be a lucky side that gets you if it does happen. I want to thank you on behalf of the Football Revolution tonight for giving us your time and honesty, and we certainly enjoyed it, and wishing you all the best. And as I said, hopefully we might be hearing a lot more about Melzi in the coming seasons.
I hope so. Thank you for having me, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for being on the show, mate.
Thanks again, George. Such an impressive young man. I'm really looking forward to and hoping that we'll see him announce an A-League contract very shortly, because they're the players that we need to get back here and then hopefully get him in an Aussie shirt again. Coming up next, the VAR.
Welcome to the Football Revolution, hosted by Gio, Jules and PK.
Welcome back to the Football Revolution, into the final segment for tonight's show and for the year, which is the VAR. Fellas, what do we need to cover off for our final show?
Just some thank yous, I'm guessing.
There's a couple of things. Plus, we do have a couple of awards that has always filled our VAR section at the end. I think important we get those done first. And your Honk Bar for the Year Award, Gio.
Look, it took on a few different versions. So we had Honk Bar, Hog Bar, we had
Shonk Bar,
yeah, I think. For me, look, I think there was a lot of good entrants, but for me, I think David Williams, just because
he was going so damn well. As soon as Roldan pulled the plug, I think he went down with the bathwater. he lost his way. And from a guy who was getting nominated for Goal of the Year each week, he then went to a couple of open goal misses. And yeah, so for me, I think just because of the light and shade of being 1 minute unstoppable, the next minute being couldn't stop himself. So it
was 1 minute being talked about Socceroos at one stage. Then,
yeah,
I suppose unplayable could have been it. Yeah. So, just whichever way you looked at it.
So yeah, and then all of a sudden he went from Socceroos to Shockeroos within the space of 2 weeks. So for me, just from going from hero to zero in the space of no matter of time at all, I give it to Mr. David Williams.
Just about sums up Wellington's season, doesn't it?
Pretty much it does. My pest of the year, we had a couple of big contenders. Wenzel Halls was he's a pest of the future to watch. But I don't think anyone comes within a shade of Ryan Grant. That is the ultimate pest. He's combative. He's a fantastic player as well. But, God, I would hate to be marked by him because he is a massive pest. And then he makes you run just for the thrill of it too. Well,
what I like about it too, he is definitely a pest. You can see was giving it to David.
But he backs it up.
Exactly right. He actually backs up and puts a good solid shift in for 90 minutes.
And you know what he wins is a date at the hairdresser's. Yeah, he needs something there. It's desperate for that haircut. Yes, it's a bad one, but I think he does it because he loves the attention that it gives him, and it means they're concentrating on his haircut and not him running.
I'd rather zero attention.
if you had a haircut like that.
Yeah, I'd rather zero. You just can't. That reminds you of something, I don't know, from Police Academy from the 80s or just a real G-up movie, like something that's just not for real. So, yeah, look, I think, as you all guys said, he's got class about him and I think he's great for Sydney FC, but you want to be known on the pitch as for what you do on the pitch, not for being, the galah with the funny hair.
Goldilocks.
So, yeah.
That's it. But that ties up all our awards and things. It's been a super season. We've certainly enjoyed it and we want to thank all of our guests that have been interviewed. I think they're the first ones to make the show. PK's knocked down a season already. I think you've had a tremendous one. Gio, stock standard. You never know what you get, but it's always good.
True. I don't know what I'm going to say is
also the FNR network that has been playing us week in, week out, and also obviously we did something right when they replayed us as well, and the fans and those that are listening, we really do appreciate all of that, and we look forward to bringing you more content in the next year. And given the amount of players that have been released, I think it's going to be a merry-go-round of recycled and new players coming into the league. So we'll have plenty of ammunition. I mean, plenty of topics to talk about next year.
But I hear that we're keeping our three strong. So there's no at this club, we're not making any changes. We are sticking with what we've got.
It's a winning formula.
I was going to say as well, if any of the players that we did interview during the year want us to negotiate a deal for them, we're more than happy to.
Well, look, we've had plenty of offers that are out there. And yeah, I mean, I'm still keen for lasagna, so that was always on the offer there.
I just can't get over. Like I said, there's been lots of moments that I'll always remember, and we still speak to a lot of these players as well and keep in touch. Is just you've got Joey Gibbs sitting there as the community guy up at the Mariners, and they don't at least say, come have a kick with us, just see what you're capable of. That'll do me. I can't get over that.
Well, I heard they're bringing an NFL running back to try strike next year, so who knows what's going to happen. That's probably why. They answer your question, actually.
No, I've heard that there's been some feelers out by the Mariners to the UFC.
Well, it could be.
Yeah, they want a centre back who can do a double fist pump elbow to the head. So.
Well, to watch this space, I think.
So yeah, look, thank you very much once again for all your support this year, and we look forward to speaking to you again next season.
Thanks again, everyone.
Thanks, guys.